I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the party in power is working overtime to try to suppress the will of Washington voters. Plus, Steve Hickey, an influencer and independent journalist with more than a million followers, responds to allegations that he is a squatter and a con man. Also, what Dr. Anthony Fauci had to say about suppression of the lab leak theory. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. The party in power really does not care about your opinion. They don't. And why would they, right? They've been consolidating power for the better part of 40 years. They now have complete control in Olympia of the House, the Senate, the governor's office. They're hoping that that's going to carry on. They're expecting that to carry on to Bob Ferguson, the attorney general. And they've already said, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party said what their goal is for 2026, if not sooner. They want supermajorities so that they can fix, clean up the state constitution. If that doesn't scare the living hell out of every person who believes the government is supposed to work for them, I just don't know how to wake people up to that. And I've already said, what did I say is the first thing they'll do? Give you a second, because I know you're screaming it at your screen. I said the first thing they will do if they get supermajorities in the House and Senate is they will work to get rid of our right, the people's right, to initiative and referendum. And you might say, but Randy, that is so crazy. You conspiracy theorists, that's wild. Why would they ever do that? Why would they not? Every action they have taken in recent months during this big push for initiatives to repeal key Democratic priorities, every action they've taken, every word they've spoken has been about undermining the initiative process. It goes back to when we were collecting signatures, and Let's Go Washington was collecting signatures for six common sense initiatives last year. What did the party in power do? Well, they pushed out numbers to a tip line saying, call and snitch on lawful signature gatherers, take pictures of them, give us a description of them so we can send people out and harass them, protest them if we need to. And we saw some of that playing out firsthand. I mean, we were protested collecting signatures. I was at a Costco where a woman lost her mind and crossed out a whole page of signatures. And that is, of course, a result of the party in power encouraging, authorizing, really, that kind of behavior. And then you saw it at the highest levels, the efforts to undermine the initiative process. Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, when all six initiatives qualified to be sent to the legislature, what did she say? She said she was disappointed in what the initiative process has become. Imagine being disappointed with more than 800,000 of your constituents taking part in a constitutionally protected democratic process to make their voices heard, and you're saddened and disappointed. And Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, a moderate Democrat who I met with on the very issue in his office of harassing signature gatherers, he never said anything publicly about it. He sent a member of his office to testify on behalf of a bill to protect signature gatherers, but he very much could have used his voice to push back against what the Democratic Party was doing publicly, but he didn't. And then you get into what I would call incredibly nefarious efforts to, now that three of these initiatives are going to the ballot in November, to try to stop that from happening. Nefarious and just obvious. So Democrats felt compelled to, oh gosh, we've got to sign a couple of these things into law and we'll maybe try to challenge them later or erode them later, but let's just throw voters a bone so they think we did something. So they signed three of the least politically risky ones into law and three that wouldn't strip some of their just valuable funding for their political cronies and allies. So they signed them into law. Three are going to voters, but they can't let that be. They can't. So they have to find ways to try to prevent you from having a say. That's what this is. They do not want voters to vote on the policies that they have pushed through, which is crazy because those policies are costing us money. They're costing us money, whether it's the carbon tax, the Climate Commitment Act, which is costing us money at the gas pump, whether it's the long-term care tax, which most people didn't even want but couldn't successfully opt out of in time, and now they're just paying into it, or whether it's the tax on capital gains, which, yes, right now it's targeted at people's gains on the sale of stocks and bonds and other assets that are fairly high income. But if you think for one second that they're not going to look to expand the tax on capital gains to include things like the sale of your house, you're just fooling yourself. That's what they're on the track. They're making the homeless crisis so bad that they're going to come out and say, we have to fix this by increasing taxes. And so we're just going to have to lower the threshold for capital gains. It's no longer going to be the richest of the rich people who are going to have to pay. So you have these three initiatives trying to deal with each of those issues. And there is this push behind the scenes, or sometimes very publicly, to undermine every single one of them. So I want to start with an interesting lawsuit that's happening. There was an effort and a bill passed in Olympia that, again, its only intent was to undermine these specific initiatives. And what the bill said, pushed through by the party in power, was, okay, if you want to try to repeal a policy that's collecting tax revenue, the attorney general has to put on the ballot next to that initiative a little blurb that says, here's all the things that you'll lose if you vote yes on this. It's just crazy. It's a blatant attempt to influence voters. It's like, hey, if you repeal the Climate Commitment Act, whales are gonna die. You know, it's like that bad. So they're gonna go in there and they get to put this little blurb next to the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, the initiative to repeal capital gains, and the initiative to repeal long-term care. And they're gonna say, here's all the horrible things that'll happen to our state if you take this money away from us. And Republicans are like, that's not fair. And everyone who signed the initiative should say, that's not fair. You don't get to then say, there's nothing next to it that says, here's all the money that you're going to save personally. Here's what this has been costing you. You know, and on long-term care, it's not even taking it away. It's just making it optional. It's letting you decide whether you want to pay into it and then down the road benefit from it. But anyway, Democrats can't have that. So there's these kind of warning labels that are going to be put on the initiatives. Vote yes, and this is the terrible stuff that's going to happen. So there's a couple interesting things here. The Washington State, Jim Walsh, went out and filed a chair of the Republican Party, also a state representative. There is now a lawsuit challenging these warning labels, and I think rightfully so. Here's the article from Center Square. Thank you. Lawsuit challenging warning labels on Washington initiatives is in court this week. Attorney General Bob Ferguson maintains the warning label law gives him the right to declare whether the initiatives are hazardous to the state's fiscal health. WAGOP Chairman Rep. Jim Walsh sees it differently. He is behind the lawsuit. He told the Center Square, it's designed entirely to derail the people's initiatives by spinning editorialized comments from the partisan Office of Financial Management and the AG's office, he said. Deanna Martinez, the chair of the Mainstream Republicans of Washington, actually filed the lawsuit. Walsh says it's a partisan spin, not good public policy. He says Ferguson has contradicted himself when it comes to when the law about fiscal impact statements should apply. And this is where things get fascinating, because Jim Walsh is going to argue here and in court this week that Democrats, in their efforts to deny, for instance, that the Climate Commitment Act is a tax, remember, they emailed us. The governor's office emailed us when I called it a tax and said, it's not a tax. Don't call it a tax. So Democrats don't want you to think the CCA and the carbon pricing is a tax on you, even though it's very clearly a tax at the gas pump. So they've said that over and over and over and tried to correct the media whenever we call it a tax. The question is, will their insistence on pretending it's not a tax actually hurt them here? Jim Walsh says the current AG is too clever by half and has jammed himself up. They made points to say that the financial impacts of these bad policies were not taxes when they were supporting them. If they're not taxes, there's no reason for one of these impact statements. Are you following along here? So these impact statements are only supposed to apply by the law the Democrats passed to the repeal of taxes, to revenue to the government, right? But they said, well, that's not a tax, it's not a tax, it's not a tax. Okay. If it's not a tax, then why do we need these fiscal impact statements next to it? So that'll be a very interesting argument to see play out in court. Here's an article from the Chronicle. Has a little bit of a different take on it. GOP-backed lawsuit could prevent voters from seeing potential fiscal impacts of Washington state initiatives. I love how that headline, usually the Chronicle is pretty good, could prevent voters from seeing the potential fiscal impact. It's like, okay, but voters are also being prevented from the truth about the impact to them financially. If you were going to put both, fine. If you're going to put the impact to state budget, if it's repealed, but also the impact to the average Washingtonian, if it's repealed, then that would be fair. But to include one and not the other isn't fair at all, and it's not giving voters a complete picture. The Chronicle writes, according to WGOP Chairman and State Rep. Jim Walsh, a recently enacted law that requires the state attorney general to write a fiscal impact statement for the state voters pamphlet does not apply as the initiatives do not expressly target taxes. The lawsuit is set for a hearing on June 7th, which is 3 days from now, in Thurston County Superior Court. Passed by the state legislature in 2022, the fiscal impact statements were universally opposed by Republican lawmakers, though polling by the Northwest Progressive Institute showed 82% of Washingtonians supported their inclusion. Walsh said, "Our friends outsmarted themselves. They were very specific when they passed the warning label law, but they were so specific," he says, "that the law doesn't apply to any of the initiatives that go before the voters this year. This case is so clear-cut, I am surprised we have to take this to court." I guess we'll find out, because it is hard to find a court in Washington state that looks at these things without ideology dripping from them. So we'll see if Jim Walsh is able to prevail, and Deanna Martinez with the Washington state mainstream Republicans in this case. But it's very interesting. Again, you know, capital gains. What do they say about capital gains? It's not an income tax. It's not an income tax. So it'll be interesting to see how their efforts to spin these things as like good public policy that actually weren't taxes are going to maybe backfire on them, right? So now we go on to Initiative 2061 and another effort to undermine the will of voters. The ACLU and others have now sued to block Initiative 2061 from appearing on your ballot in November. That is the parental rights initiative that Democrats signed into law at the end of the legislative session, because what was their argument? Oh, it doesn't do anything anyway. We already have parental rights. We already have a parental bill of rights in Washington. So it's just a right-wing talking point that we need a parental, this initiative to solidify parental rights. We already do that. So they're like, we'll sign it into law. It's a nothing burger. If it's a nothing burger, why is the ACLU suing over it? If it doesn't do anything and it's just codifying protections that are already in place, why is the ACLU suing over it? Well, that doesn't make any sense, because, of course, the initiative isn't a nothing burger, and the initiative does help to codify parental rights and to make sure that schools aren't hiding things from parents, which we've seen far too often. This from the Washington State Standard. Lawsuit seeks to block Washington Parental Rights Initiative. The state legislature approved the initiative earlier this year. It's set to take effect June 6th, as is the police pursuit initiative, which is very exciting. The lawsuit argues that students, parents, and school districts will be harmed by the initiative and that it was drafted in a way that violates the state constitution. A staff attorney for the ACLU of Washington said the initiative passed because of deception and confusion, and it will cause life-altering negative outcomes for queer and trans students if it's implemented. Think about that for a second. The initiative passed because of deception and confusion. So they're calling you idiots. If you signed, more than 400,000 of you signed the parental rights initiative, and you're just not very smart, and you were just simply confused, you know? You were lied to, you were misled, you were confused, you didn't know what you were signing. And this parental rights initiative that will make sure that information isn't hidden from parents will cause life-altering negative outcomes for queer and trans students. So that's you saying that schools are a better place for kids to get the help they need, as opposed to at home, that parents can't be trusted with that kind of information. They can't be trusted to care for their queer or trans teens. I also find it just fabulously interesting that they say that students, parents, and school districts will be harmed by the initiative. Parents are going to be harmed by a parental rights initiative? This is good stuff. You can't make that up. So ACLU of Washington along with two other legal groups, filed the lawsuit in King County Superior Court, and there's 10 plaintiffs. So just a little more on Initiative 2081, if you don't recall. According to the state standard, it called for a range of student school materials, such as textbooks, curriculum, and a child's medical records to be easily available for review by parents. Parents will also be given notice and allowed to opt their child out of assignments and other activities involving questions about a child's sexual experiences or their family's religious beliefs. The initiative, written by Jim Walsh, and is one of six initiatives backed by conservative head fund manager Brian Haywood, passed unanimously through the Washington State Senate and through the House with only a few Democrats opposed. So it's really interesting. Here you have this initiative that, again, Democrats put through. It wouldn't have been able to pass into law during the session if Democrats hadn't supported it. And Democrats' argument for supporting it is that it doesn't do anything. Yet the ACLU says not only does it do something, it could put the lives of queer and trans kids at risk. And actually pushing through a parental rights initiative and letting, oh gosh, the voters of Washington vote on it, vote to decide whether they think it will put the lives of queer and trans teens at risk. That's such a bad prospect that they want to sue to keep it off the ballot. And it's the ACLU. The ACLU is such a fraud. It is such a fraud. The things the ACLU, supposed to be the Civil Liberties Union, and the things they have done over the years to try to strip away or downplay the civil liberties of anyone who isn't a left-wing progressive, utterly insane. Dave Reichert spoke out about this, which I was glad he brought this up, because it's supposed to be the job of Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, to defend the will of voters. So I believe that it would be up to Bob Ferguson and his office to defend the right of voters to vote on this against the ACLU. You really think Bob Ferguson is going to give it his best in a lawsuit that the ACLU is bringing against what they're painting as right-wing conservatives who just want parents in everyone's business? God forbid parents are in their kids' business. So that's the question. If it's Bob Ferguson's office defending it, what kind of defense are we the people going to get? Probably not very good, says Dave Reichert, Republican candidate for governor. He tweeted, "Where's Bob? It's been over a week since the ACLU filed a lawsuit attempting to circumvent the will of the legislature and voters to overturn the Parental Bill of Rights. Where do you stand, Bob, with Washington families or the ACLU?" Because we all know the ACLU doesn't stand with Washington families. That's just clear as day. So it's interesting. I don't know, and we'll reach out to Bob Ferguson's office through the Attorney General's office, because remember, his campaign doesn't respond to our requests for comment anymore. So we'll have to go through the old-fashioned way straight to the Attorney General's office. But is he going to? I mean, he had to defend car tabs, right? So is he going to give us his best in defending the Parental Bill of Rights? Or not so much? I think it's important that Dave noted that it is really attempting this lawsuit to circumvent two things, not just the will of voters, but the will of the legislature. So Democrats who signed this, right, they ought to be opposed. They ought to be coming out against the ACLU suing over it, right? Oh, but the ACLU has donated to too many of their campaigns, I'm sure. What a predicament for them to be in. All right, let's go to another one. Gosh, there's a lot happening, again, with the effort to undermine voters and also just lie to voters, fearmonger over things, and we're doing our best. We're doing our best to point out demonstrable lies, like the lies that have been told about the earth will end if you repeal the CCA. No, it won't. The earth will be fine, and you'll have a lot more money in your pocket because you're going to vote yes and you're going to pay less. Fox 13 on Initiative 2109, which is the campaign against 2109, repeals the capital gains tax, launches across Washington. So you have all these huge donors who are, I mean, like Bill Gates. Bill Gates is donating to try to keep you poorer by supporting the CCA. He's opposing the initiative to repeal the CCA. So now they've officially launched the campaign against Initiative 2109 because they want to keep the capital gains tax. Why? Because it's bringing in more money for Democrats than they know what to do with. They love it. This is a windfall of cash for them to dole out to their pet projects and their political allies. So they got to keep this thing. According to Fox 13, educators, childcare providers, and advocates gathered in Berrien, Yakima, Spokane, and Vancouver to launch the No on I-2109 campaign Wednesday. It would repeal Washington's capital gains tax, which is a 7% tax on the sale of stocks and assets over $250,000. In its first year, the Department of Revenue says less than 4,000 people pay the tax, but it brought in nearly $900 million for childcare, education, and school construction. Dr. Stephen Blanford, executive director of Children's Alliance, says the tax is helping hundreds of thousands of kids across the state. On the other hand, Brian Haywood, who's behind the initiative, believes the capital gains tax gets Washington closer to having a state income tax. Dr. Blanford says, that's not the case. We're not going to do that. He says, the reality is what's on the ballot is not an income tax. There are also people who pay the tax and are happy to pay it, because they know it's creating a better society in our state. Yeah, that's why Jeff Bezos took all his money and he ran to Miami, because he was really happy about paying the, and then sold his Amazon stocks there, like for the first time in years, and cashed in on them there, as opposed to doing it here and paying into the tax. Here's the thing though. Look, if it were always going to be this way, 4,000 people on the higher income end, and it was truly funding all these wonderful things, I probably wouldn't be vehemently opposed to it. There's two main reasons that I am vehemently opposed to it and why we have to stop it in its tracks. And it's about being more forward thinking than the makeup of the capital gains tax right now. One is they're lying about it. It's unconstitutional. Every state in the union and the IRS says a tax on capital gains is a tax on income. But we're the only state, magically, that says, no, that's an excise tax. And that's what they have to say, because an income tax that's not consistent across the board, that targets certain groups of people unfairly, is against our state constitution. So this is an unconstitutional tax, plain as day. That's one of the fundamental reasons I'm opposed to it. And the other is something I mentioned earlier. It isn't going to continue to affect just 4,000 people. There is no way. As soon as they get the sign off to keep this thing going, they've already done it. They've already tried to. They're going to continue to lower the threshold, take away things that are exempt, to the point where, again, where you, when you sell your home, if you've been living in Washington State for 10 plus years in the same home, you already know that you're sitting on your retirement. There are people in this state who in 20 years have tripled, quadrupled their value of their home, has tripled or quadrupled. So let's say in 5 years you go to sell it and they've already lowered the capital gains threshold and got rid of some of the things that are exempt. Well, now all of a sudden you're paying them a 7% tax for them to put into education, when we have so much money for education in this state. We're not hurting for money in this state. Yet here you have these three huge sources of revenue that come in, bang, bang, bang. Long-term care, you're paying into whether you want it or not. Climate Commitment Act, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. Capital gains tax, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. Yet they're still complaining that they don't have enough money? Newsflash, they will never have enough money. There is no ceiling for them. There is no amount of money too large. There is no amount of money that they won't find a way to spend. They'll never, ever, ever be satiated. So this is about drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, you have enough money. It's time to budget like everyone else does. And you can't continue to push these projects on the backs of working class people and be dishonest about the impact those things are having on working class people. I hope voters can see that come November, if these initiatives are even there. Who knows what's going to happen to parental rights? Who knows with capital gains what kind of way they're going to find to finagle? It's just insane to me. They're just lying along the way. I'm going to have a story tomorrow to start the show about Jay Inslee. He is going to leave office, sticking firmly to his lies on the Climate Commitment Act. He is going to leave office gaslighting every step of the way. It's how we're going to start the show tomorrow. So we'll have more on these efforts to undermine voters then. Coming up next, an influencer in the Seattle area, one of the biggest influencers in the state, who has amassed more than 1 million followers, is being accused of being a squatter and a con man. We played a story from Jonathan Cho on these accusations against Steve Hickey yesterday. Today, Steve Hickey is going to join us to respond to them. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point in 2024, don't choose a real estate agent until you've talked to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He knows the market in and out. Bryce and Carla, who are fans of Undivided, when they decided to sell their Bellevue home to move to Florida, they gave Wes Jones a call, and they were so happy they did.
He was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market and his professionalism and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Yeah, and they were able to sell their home in 7 days, even with interest rates the way they were in January, and they sold it for over list price. So if you're in the market to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, an interesting story I think is outside what we normally do on the podcast, but we've been watching this story develop from a distance because it's kind of, it's like influencer versus influencer with another influencer, and it's gotten a lot of attention on social media. So this goes back to a story, and we've talked about squatters a lot on the show. And typically you think of squatters as someone who, you know, breaks into a rundown house, sets up shop, and then refuses to leave. You know, or like the case in Bellevue that we've been dealing with where you have a, yeah, he started as a real tenant. Then he refused to pay rent for 2 years. So we've talked about several horror stories, but this story of alleged squatting is very, very different. And it's very interesting because of the person who's allegedly doing the squatting. So this all started with an expose done by a YouTuber with more than 6 million followers, whose name is Tyler Oliveria. Tyler comes to town to do a long piece on the squatting issue that we're having in Washington State because of some of our crazy laws. And he does it alongside our friend Jonathan Cho with the Discovery Institute, who, with Tyler's help, they do a series of reports on varying levels of squatting. And one of them was what they're calling a white-collar squatter. A guy named Steve Hickey, who, if you're not familiar with him, he is a big time independent journalist, guerrilla journalist, and he does it all on social media. So he's amassed this huge following. But here's part of the story that Tyler and Jonathan Cho aired about 2 weeks ago.
What happens when you buy a home? There's an old tenant who's been living in there rent-free for the last 2 years, who refuses to leave, leaving you with $1.4 million less dollars, stuck with legal fees in court for the last 8 months, and forcing you and your four kids to move in with your mom and dad. Well, that's allegedly the case of our alleged white-collar squatter, Steve Hickey.
We just wanted to take a look at the squatting epidemic in the United States, but this is unique because we have a guy in a position of power, relative wealth, doing well for himself. He's not some degenerate, jobless bum breaking into someone's house. This is a well-known figure in the community. Is he legally allowed to be there right now?
Based on what I can tell, I mean, the answer is no. He's not only an industry colleague, I would consider him a friend. Somebody who's given me news tips, somebody who's helped me out in the field, like one of the nicest guys you'll meet. But the allegations are just like too ridiculous now to ignore. So as a journalist, I've just got to be objective now. He has more than 1 million followers on all of his social media platforms, and he's just well respected, and he does decent work, especially during a time when American journalism is in decline. Frankly, I've, you know, called him several times already and had private conversations, and I'm like, dude, I don't know if these are true, these allegations, that is, but if they are, you got to like settle these. And I've just tried to walk him off the cliff and say, look, man, it's not worth your career.
So these two major influencers, one national, one Jonathan Cho here in Seattle, they do this story. They do this expose on Steve Hickey. They confront him. And this thing has taken on a life of its own. So after, you know, these stories come out, there's been protests. There was just one this past weekend against Steve Hickey, his face all over posters, saying that he is squatting in this home that belongs to a mother who wants to live there with her four kids. Now, ever since that happened, and all this has gained momentum and traction, other allegations have began to surface against Steve Hickey. So there's the initial squatting allegation that comes out, gets millions of views. But after that, there are dozens of individuals who came forward making other allegations against Steve Hickey. He used to own a construction company called Meridian Build Group. It went under, and he left a ton of contractors and subcontractors unpaid. And they're all livid over it. And they're now starting to come out and tell their stories. He's also being accused of using his position as a fire commissioner to help him get better videos for social media, to get to scenes faster, to use equipment, to be able to get some of these videos that he pushes out there that get a ton of views. So here's the thing. There's a lot to unpack here. But Steve Hickey agreed to come into our studio, sit down with me, and go through these accusations in detail. So what I want to do today is play some clips from those interviews. And I really want to take it point by point. And let's start with the accusation of squatting. So Steve Hickey says that he had a contract with the previous owner of this massive home in Ravensdale. And it was a lease with an option to buy. So essentially, he was leasing it to live there, but he had an option in 5 years to buy the home. He says when he tried to exercise that option, the deal got messy. He claims the homeowner at the time tried to change things around on him at the last moment. And so they get in this big disagreement over it. And the owner ends up selling the home when Hickey stops paying rent. He sells it to someone else, a woman named Katrina Freitag. Now, the three of them are in this complex legal situation. Is it squatting? Or is it not squatting? Is it simply just a really complicated case involving a real estate transaction gone bad? Here's part of my conversation with Steve. Do you want to continue on with the original agreement that you could finalize and purchase the home? Do you want to buy the home at this
point? I see the only pathway at this point is a settlement. I mean, you can't. She's paid more than I would have had to pay. She can't just give me the keys. I guess in some world that would be possible, but in reality, that's probably not an
issue. So you don't want the home at this point?
Where I was is I wanted to put it on market. Mm-hmm. But I don't see how that would make any sense at this point. We're not going to resell the home. I think we just need to sit down, the three of us, and settle this out, which myself and my attorney have been trying to get them to do. It's just get to a settlement, and then we go our separate ways.
So settle, pay you out for your troubles as part of this, and then she keeps the home and she gets to move into the home.
I would see that as being a possibility.
Now, why not, this is a woman with four kids, why not move out and let her live in her home while it's being disputed? Or do you lose your leverage that way?
There's certainly a leverage complaint. Why would I move out when I've been wronged by the previous owner? I've had hundreds of thousands of dollars stolen from me in this transaction. And now I just give up the stolen goods?
Well, but as you said there, you've been wronged by the previous owner.
I have no complaints about Steve up through 2021.
Okay.
It was in 2022, in April in particular, that he stopped making payments. And after April, we went through a phase where he was trying to renegotiate the deal. We never could come to terms with each other on that renegotiation. And in June of 2022, he told us he was going to purchase the property, which was great. We, in fact, signed papers. Notary came to our house in Arizona. Everything looked good, but the money never transferred. It never happened.
So after a year and a half of not paying his rent, you sell this property while he's still in it to Katrina?
Yes, and we were very upfront about the situation at the time. Once she's able to get him out of there and get the property back up to speed, her equity will, I think, cover.
No. And Katrina thought he may leave?
I believe that's true, but you should ask her.
Attorneys reviewed the situation. He was in the house, and his, I believe it was a five-year lease agreement, was to be up end of September, and he had not paid rent.
So it was under your belief that he would leave the property at what point in time?
When I purchased the home, we submitted a vacate notice and lease termination for 90 days. December 31st, he was to be moved out.
And did he move out?
No, he has squatted since.
You already have said that you want some sort of settlement for basically what you've been through and that she'll probably keep the home.
I don't know if that's settlement, resolution.
Resolution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which doesn't involve you taking the keys and living there. So you're already saying that you're not going to live there. Like, this lady will probably move her family
in. I'm saying that that would probably be the path of least resistance to get to resolution between all of us.
Why not just let her move her family in? Because that wouldn't preclude you from getting a settlement still from your previous owner. The court case would continue, right?
So because she comes in and just purchases it from somebody else who was on title, I should then just give her that home? That doesn't make any sense. Well, not legally. There's legal precedent for the pathway that we're going on here. This isn't just, hey, let's shoot from the hip, see what we can do.
Yeah.
There's legal precedent here.
And I'm not telling you to do anything, but I'm asking you why not do that? Because what, again, and I'm trying to sort of explain this. I get it, it's a complicated situation. This is why I don't think this is a squatter situation.
Right, right.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't think this is a squatter situation. Yeah. However, it seems, one, really messy. But if you already know that the resolution that's most likely does not involve you just being given this house, right? Or being able to finalize
it. Never would be
your,
given that house. That was never
or to finalize it. You want your money back, basically, right?
I would
you
like
want your money back that you put
minimum,
into the house.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And so my thought is, why not let this lady and her four kids live there? Because you still have the court case going on. You're still actively pursuing a case to get the money back.
We should all three get to a settlement table then and get this done.
Do you think it would be an act of good faith to move out of the house while you wait for that resolution? Because what happens at the end of the day, Steve, if the judge does not rule in your favor?
I will have to accept that, but I also think an act of good faith is coming to the settlement table.
Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that?
No, they have not.
Not done
We've even
table.
Sent settlement offers out and not gotten responses.
Yeah. So you're free to settle. And you think if they were coming to the table, if they were actively negotiating with you, would you be willing to leave the house?
If we got into active negotiations, we would get to resolution quickly. I'm sure.
I think so.
I'm quite confident in that.
Yeah. I do want to ask you about something you said in a video because it really struck me. And actually, we talked about it offline already.
Yes. The woman you've seen in the video who now claims to be a poor single mother of four, though she leaves out the fact that she paid nearly $1.4 million in hard liquid cash, as she does have considerable wealth.
You seem to kind of try to vilify her for having the money to buy the house outright. It came across that way.
Yeah, thank you for asking
Do you feel like it came across that way?
It certainly did based on the comments I saw. It was unintentional. My point in mentioning that was specifically saying there were red flags here. Mm-hmm. The fact that it could not be financed was an indicator that there was a problem.
Yeah.
I don't care how much money she has. More power to her. She needed to have money to come into
this. It was apparently from a divorce settlement.
So be it. However it came through, it's her money to do with as she pleases. And more power to her.
Mm-hmm.
My comment specifically was saying, you knew you couldn't finance this. You did it in cash. So somebody was telling you, hey, you should be concerned about this. You may want to actually get to resolution before closing.
So here's the thing. My opinion is this obviously isn't a traditional squatting case. There are obviously some legal things that are being worked out in a court of law. There's an ongoing legal case here trying to sort out essentially what would happen. But while I don't think it's a squatting case, it doesn't mean I think it's right. And it doesn't mean I think he has a good moral legal cause or reason to continue to be in that home. And one of the things I was trying to articulate there to Steve, and I guess I'm Pollyannish, but I always think, you know, can you do what's right while also sorting it out? And you have the legal case. So if you win the legal case, you can still get your money back without actually being physically in the home when that happens. You know, the legal case and it proceeding, whether he's in the home while it's happening, has no bearing because he's not making an argument about, you know, possession of the home or being in the home. That's not the end he's trying to achieve. He's not arguing that he wants to stay in the home. So that's not even an outcome that he's shooting for. It's almost like he's staying in the home for leverage. So I don't think it's a squatting case. That doesn't mean I think it's right. And look, when does he plan to leave? And could it become a squatting situation? I asked him that very question. Here's what he said.
So are you fully prepared to and plan to stay in that home until there's a judgment?
I am fully prepared to get to a point where we settle. That's why we've called for summary judgment. We don't feel the need to wait till the end of the year for resolution. We push for summary judgment to happen at the end of June based off a certain number of provisions saying we can get this solved now, let's do it. If we can't, and they're still not willing to come to the negotiating table, that's something they need to also look in the mirror and understand why that is.
And if the judge does not rule in your favor, going back to the squatting claim, will you leave?
If it was absolutely. If that's, I don't have a choice at that point.
You're not going to make him go through some sort of crazy process to get you out, right?
Well, let's see what he comes back with as a ruling. But I will honor the court process. That's where I've wanted this thing to stay.
So I'm going to take him at his word for that and hope that he's being honest that, yeah, if the court doesn't rule in his favor, that he's going to get out of there and allow Katrina to take over the home. So I want to move on to the second allegation here. Again, we're going to take these one by one because the squatting thing comes out. And then all of a sudden, there are all these people who did business with Steve when he had a construction company called Meridian Build Group that say he screwed them over, that he's a con man, that he stole money from them, that he left them unpaid. And there are, this is just factual. You can see the documentation with L&I. There are a number of subcontractors who were working on projects for Steve, who were left unpaid to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars after he, in his words, wound down Meridian Build Group. So I wanted to get into it with him about, you know, what happened and what those subcontractors were left with. And I will say, of all the allegations, this is the one that he seems to sort of accept, you know, as true, but isn't willing to obviously admit that or say that he did it maliciously.
There are subcontractors not paid, and they have every right to be frustrated. Yeah. I've been on the other end of that, too. There's nothing that can be said that are going to make them feel okay about that. But that is not theft, and that is not a scam.
So the financing doesn't come through. So there's some subcontractors. He just highlighted one in a story that came out this morning of a guy who is out $100,000. And he characterizes it as like you stole that money from him.
Angel Soriano is a contractor and is out more than $100,000 after laying concrete for Hickey.
He hurt me so bad, you know, hurt my family, hurt my company.
Like all the others, Soriano says he cannot go to the police since this is considered a civil matter.
Whatever comes around goes around, you know, that's what I think.
What is your response when you hear that man's frustration of losing that money and blaming you for it?
So that man specifically, there was an argument about that because he was paid what was in his contract. He had significant change orders that he had done without ever calling him out until he was done, said, I just did more work and I'm owed money. So there was a dispute on that. In the end, though, I'm sure he was owed something. I don't doubt that. The company probably owed him something, and he has every right to be frustrated.
Yeah.
That's a terrible situation. I've been on both sides of that type of thing. It's not good. It's a terrible situation, especially when you have individuals out there who are really kind of, I call, close to the blade.
Yeah.
You know, they're out there actually pumping the mud and they're cutting the wood.
Blue collar,
yes,
and hard work.
Completely. That's not a good situation. Yeah. That's still not theft or fraud, as he's wanted to classify.
What is it then?
When you have a company wind down, there's going to be a loss. There generally is. When you have the money not coming in to cover those debts, that's a terrible situation. That's why businesses go into this stuff and have their pricing according to that to handle those types of things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not enough, right? It can still close a place. It did to Meridian.
Stay away from this guy.
Ivan Baca says Hickey failed to pay for heating and air conditioning work on a project, taking off with close to $85,000.
How does that impact your company?
Well, we just lose the money. Our guys did not get the bonuses what they should get.
So what happens to those subcontractors? They just sort of, like, sucks to be them?
There were a lot that were settled out. The one who you're talking about who was in there, that was actually settled out as well. A lot of them were settled. I think that's kind of where he's also not drawing a line in the sand of who settled and who was still left holding the bag.
Yeah.
There were a number that were settled out on pennies on the dollar. Some got more, some got less. So it's all over the place.
So what they got is what they got. Like, there's no money coming for them,
basically. At that point, there's nothing left.
Yeah, so I think the situation with this, too, is, you know, Steve hasn't been charged, arrested, convicted of a crime related to that. But it also doesn't make it right. I think he's acknowledging there, like, yeah, there are contractors who are out a lot of money. Some were paid, you know, pennies on the dollar for the work that he did, acknowledging the frustration that they feel. Now, I will say personally, I reached out as part of, you know, doing some digging into this, because this isn't my area of expertise, you know, construction and building and the ins and outs of all of that. I asked a contractor I've worked with several times, both on my home, on our last two studios. I ran all this by him this morning and said, is that usual? And he said, no. He said the last time he can remember, and he's been doing this for decades, that he got stiffed was in 2003. It had been some time. He said, typically, if a construction company, a builder is winding down, they try to do what's right. And they try to make things right and make sure people get paid. So Steve, for whatever reason, was not able to do that. And so he's got all these judgments, accusations against him with L&I that are just in black and white. And so that's not something that he can deny. But the question, again, is between kind of right and wrong. And should he have made or attempted to make those contractors whole, especially at a time where he was going through an agreement to buy a very big, expensive home, making huge lump sum payments toward that end. All right, I want to get to the third accusation against Steve Hickey that has resulted from all of this and give him a chance to respond to it. He is being accused of using his position as a fire commissioner in King County to access some of these scenes and more quickly in first responders to be able to get some of the really good video of the crime coverage he does that he puts out to his million plus followers that he sometimes gets money for. So here's what Steve Hickey had to say about those accusations. The accusation being that you're using this position to sort of get to these scenes and to take video for your social media.
Which is absurd. Yeah. I've never filmed a situation in the district that I serve first. I want to be very clear with that. Okay. I've never gone and used that for my social media. Does not work that way. Second, my coming out, I would never go to a scene. If I went to a scene, you should come with me. So maybe we'll do an undercover where I go in and say, hey, I'm a commissioner. Right. Let's see how that works out for me.
So I will ask Jonathan Cho about what you're saying is that he filed the complaint, but there's some other people who are on the record as sharing similar sentiments. Mm-hmm. So I want to read a couple of those to you and have you respond to them. So this is from an EMT who doesn't want to use their name, understandably so. I've had an issue with Steve's use of department equipment to financially support his photography and videography business on social media. He uses his access as a commissioner to have radios to chase calls and then sells the content for profit.
False.
You've never used radios or any equipment, as he's saying.
No, you get that stuff. I have subscriptions online that are far better access than a fire department radio.
Yeah. He's also an EMT. On February 26, 2022, he arrived first on an accident, called it in over the radio, talked to the patient, then abandoned the patient to go back to his car to live stream it on TikTok.
No.
Never happened.
No. They've pulled the incident. It's not even in the town I serve. This is ridiculous.
So did something like that happen just not in the town you serve?
No. I was driving down Maple Valley Highway with my phone already mounted on the windshield, doing whatever I do.
Yeah.
I pulled up on an accident, called in so they could come and take it. Yeah. That's their call. That's not mine.
Did you, as an EMT, though, check on the patient, make sure the patient was fine?
No, they already had people coming. When I radioed in, they already had Renton PD coming. Yeah. They come and take that. I don't have any EMT gear with me.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go out and start rendering care. I'm going to make sure that there's people showing who have all of that and they can take care of it.
You don't have a duty to serve if you're up on a scene like that? There's no sort of duty
If there was somebody in a life-threatening position, needed CPR, maybe that. But I'm not coming. I don't have any equipment. I don't have anything.
But you didn't check on them, you said. Or did you go check on them?
At that point, I walk up. I see that there's two cars. Let them know, hey, you got two cars. It looks like they've collided in an intersection. You guys need to have people on out here. And they send people on out there. They take care of the call.
And you did you live stream it on TikTok, though?
If it was on my dashboard, it would be on there. But I'm not live. It's not like, I have a call. I'm going to live stream it.
So that wasn't sort of an official response to a call in your job that you abandoned a patient as this characterization. Because this is the, an EMT told another EMT, this is the text that they send. Here's a new one. Steve is out doing his thing in Renton, comes across an accident and calls it over Fire One, does a triage, requests an MVA response, goes back to his car and live streams on TikTok before fire even arrives, leaving the patient with PD that he just triaged. Totally false?
No, I'm thinking through it as you're reading through it. Yeah. Remembering back because it's 2.5 years ago. No.
Yeah.
No, they totally go, they false. Take care of that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't go and take care of that.
So he's saying nothing improper, not using his position as a fire commissioner to maybe get to scenes quicker, to get video, to get better access. Here's one thing I want to touch on, though. Throughout our interview, and we're going to post the full interview tonight, he really was not happy with Jonathan Cho and essentially, painted it as Jonathan Cho going after these accusations and almost encouraging people to speak up, so to speak, about the accusations. And in fact, he says, he told me that Jonathan Cho is the one who actually filed the official complaint with the fire district
about his conduct that led to Steve Hickey taking a leave of absence.
I want to be very clear about this. Jonathan Cho's coming out saying, sources tell me. As a journalist, he made the complaint. That's a big deal. That matters a lot. So if you're going to go out and he went out and actually made the actual complaint to the fire department, accusing me of abuse of power and using station equipment and I believe all this idea to push my social media.
I'm sorry, he made the complaint. Define that more.
He literally wrote the complaint as himself. This isn't, I'm not uncovering him. He made it as himself and communicated, even said he wanted to do it by phone. They said, you need to do this in writing.
Yep.
He made the complaint.
Okay.
As a journalist, you don't make the complaint so you can cover it. If somebody had made a complaint, I would see this much differently.
Yeah.
Jonathan Cho fundamentally made the complaint and then covered it and then put it out and says, well, sources tell me. Yeah. Sources don't need to tell you the thing you did.
So that was the first I heard of that. So I, of course, after our interview, reached back out to Jonathan Cho, someone I have a lot of respect for, and said, hey, is that true? Are you the one who was covering the story and decided to file the complaint with the fire district to sort of force Steve to step away? And he says, that's not true. And he forwarded me the entire thread that he had with the fire district, the entire email thread. And in it, he has a request that's, as a journalist, basically saying, are you aware of these allegations against Steve Hickey? You know, what is being done to investigate him? And after I followed up with Jonathan, he asked a woman named Tracy Stiles with the King County Fire District in question if she would be willing to confirm that he never filed an official complaint. And she did say in this email provided by Jonathan Cho, good morning, Jonathan. I can confirm that my understanding has always been that you are bringing forward allegations from others. And it certainly was not the intention of our press release to state you personally were making them, rather that you had brought them forward. So she says they were, they're going to try to go and clear that up. I've asked Steve, do you have any sort of other evidence that would, you know, suggest that Jonathan is lying about this? But it seems pretty clear that even the fire district says, no, it wasn't Jonathan Cho making the complaint. It was him as a journalist coming forward about complaints that other people had. All right, one more cut I want to play, because I think a lot of you are probably thinking what I'm thinking about this, which is, that's a lot of people saying stuff about one guy. You know, we kind of went through that with the Semi Bird stuff, and things would just come out left and right about Semi Bird, and he'd have an excuse for every single one of them. And at some point, there's just this preponderance where it's like, you know, what is going on here? So that is how I closed my conversation with Steve Hickey about all the allegations in their totality. So with all the construction stuff, and I think, you know, you do journalism, and we were just doing a story today on a political candidate who, like, man, a lot of stuff comes out about him.
Sure.
And he always finds excuses for, oh, it's not me, I'm the victim. So as a journalist, it goes back to that kind of where there's smoke, there's fire. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about a couple dozen people who come out, it's like, Steve Hickey wronged me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a victim of his. You see why, like, my antenna would go up. Like,
sure.
Because it's sort of like, at some point, is it all of them? Is they're just like mistaken, or is it you?
I've already said clearly the subcontractors have a reason to be unhappy. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying, and I don't like the word victim. I'm not a victim. I don't believe the other parties are victims. Mm-hmm. This is a tough situation. These are adults getting into these things.
If how do we get to resolution? Grand, I'd be like, I'm a victim. You know,
victim.
So are they a victim of the market? Are they a victim of COVID? Are they a victim of a poorly run construction company?
To me, victim, you're getting into like intent, saying somebody did this to you.
Yeah.
That's different. If I went in and just took your money, yeah, that's a victim. That's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
When we're dealing with extenuating circumstances here and it goes, this is what the costs are, by all means, do you want to go dispute the lumber company with me? I'll go right along with you.
And
let's
you've
do
never
it.
Been you've never been charged with a crime related to any of it or anything like that. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's anything you could have or should have done better to try to make sure that that company did not?
Yeah. My belief is no matter what, in the end, there's something that could have been done. I mean, I'd been through this back in 08, 09, and there were people who got through it, and there were some that got through and some that didn't. And it was easy to say, oh, it's the market. And yeah, it is. But also, what could you have done differently? What do you learn from that? What can you do going forward? There's always something. I don't care if you get hit by a train leaving here. There's something you could have done. Right? There's always something.
Do you think this is a common occurrence for people who run construction companies?
It's a business that's tough with that. The margins are very thin and it's on big numbers. So you're coming in making 10 to 20, some merch, 25% on hundreds of thousands of dollars of transactions. Yeah. So if you have a project like that project, stall out and there's $90,000 or whatever it is of unpaid lumber, that's a big deal.
Why do you think that they're all coming out about you? You know, if this is a something that happens, sometimes construction companies go under, subcontractors aren't paid, people aren't happy, their work wasn't finished, they feel wronged. I feel like I'd be hearing more stories. Is it because of who you are, you think, and your following and your...
I think, well, once you had, so as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. the superintendent on those projects
yeah.
was the son of the person that I got the home in Ravensdale with. So when mm-hmm. Jonathan Cho goes on this fact-finding mission, mm-hmm. they go, well, why don't you talk to these people who otherwise are in the past and we're trying to move on from and we're trying yeah. to figure out what life is after all of that.
Right.
And then he's going out and contacting me. He did the same thing when he came out to the fire department. He's coming out trying to ping people and say, mm-hmm. well, did you know about this though? Oh, you think he's okay, but what about this? And it's just continue to try and drag yeah. this up. If this was something I was doing, I've been public for some time. I didn't just blow up last month.
Mm-hmm.
This has been years in the yeah. making. And so, you know, I don't want to diminish people being frustrated,
yeah.
especially the subcontractors who lost money. I don't want to diminish that at all. But if this was some sort of like organized thing, where were they 2-3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And still now somebody's coming and knocking on their door going, well, would you like to vent about it?
But you know, sometimes that's what happens in news. Until you go ask somebody what happened, they're not going to talk about it. And they're like, you know what? I would like to vent about it.
Sure. But
yeah, that, I mean, the comments yeah. online, I mean, I know that these people are just social media things, but yeah. he took me for $25,000. He was supposed to build my house in West Seattle and ran with the money. Mm-hmm. Does that ring any bells to you, Scott? I mean, there's comments like that. So the videos get posted and you've got, you know, a couple dozen people who are making claims, just maybe a handful in the video. And then you look at the comments and you've got people saying, he took me for money too. He was supposed to build my house for me. So it paints a picture of like this overwhelming amount of people spinning the same tale. And that's kind of hard to diminish in my mind.
So as I mentioned in the beginning,
yeah.
Harrison, who was the superintendent, who was the previous owner's son, connected mm-hmm. these dots of saying, hey, talk to Scotty.
Yeah.
Specifically talk to them. Once mm-hmm. you start putting that out there, and there's a company that closed down, and I was open about the fact that there were subcontractors. These are yeah. there's public record of this stuff.
Yeah, you haven't excused that.
No, not yeah. at all, and I don't intend to. Even if I could say, to your point about victims, say, well,
right.
it was this, it was all these things. In the end, it still happened.
Right.
It did. Like, there's no taking that back. So I'm not going to say, oh, they just need to suck it up.
Mm-hmm.
That would be extremely callous, and it's if I don't care. I've been sorting through this for years
yeah.
trying to settle this stuff.
So you decide. As I said, we're going to post our full interview with Steve Hickey, but this is a situation that has garnered national attention. And this is someone who, look, when I asked him to come in, you know that this isn't typically something we do on the show, interviews like that, taking up 40 minutes of the show. But this is someone who, you know, has a huge following, who amassed it in a relatively short period of time. I know how hard that can be. And so I wanted to give him a fair chance to come in and go point for point on some of these things. Obviously, there's a nexus with the squatting issue. We can agree to disagree on whether he is a squatter in the true sense. But certainly there, I think, again, it goes back to right and wrong. Could he leave the house and live somewhere else while this is being adjudicated and not lose anything in the process? Yeah, because he's not fighting to stay in that house. That's not, you know, in court what he wants. He wants to basically be paid for the money that he already spent trying unsuccessfully to buy the house. So that's a little bit of what we have for you today. We'll post that full interview online for all the other influencer followers to dive into, because this story has really gone all over the place. But you make your own decision about what you think. Is Steve Hickey someone who you want to continue to rely on for news and information? Or, you know, does all of this add up and does it tell a tale to you? So you be the decider on that. I will say, on the squatting issue, we reached out to our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. You know, we do a weekly segment with them on Tuesdays. And we thought for our segment this week, we wanted to talk about this very issue, not specifically about Steve Hickey, but is it fair to call this a squatting situation? Are there varying levels of being a squatter? And when you say that term, it is technically kind of a legal term, where in some places there are protections for people who are actually squatting, and in some states they're not. So what's the deal in Washington? Again, Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association joins us to discuss. Sean, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we've been talking about just another, you know, squatter story that's in the news. This one has some interesting layers, though, because
I look at it and I'm like, well, that doesn't seem like squatting in the traditional sense. It seems like a very complicated legal situation. So can you talk about the kind of shades of squatting that you guys see for your members at RHA?
Well, yeah. So I think the first thing to understand about what the media and I think colloquial people are referring to as squatting is that you have to understand in property law, there's sort of two ideas that happen simultaneously, and it's possession and ownership. Okay. So you can be an owner and have possession. So you think of a single family home that you own, you are both the owner and you have possession of it simultaneously. Okay. You can also have situations where you can own something, but possession can be residing with another person. So a classic example of that would be a lease. So if you're the owner of a property, you lease it out, and what that person gets the right to do is possess the property pursuant to the terms of the contract. Okay. Now you can have folks who run into hard times and aren't paying their rent or whatever happens in that lease situation that is a dispute around possession. That is resolved through the unlawful detainer process. Now, we can have a whole nother chat about the unlawful detainer process and how that's working or not working in the state of Washington, which it's not, by the way. And so there's a lot of discussion around the unlawful detainer process and if it leads to folks squatting, effectively taking advantage of the unlawful detainer process in a way that allows them to reside in a property for longer than maybe they would rightfully be able to do so.
Gotcha.
Now, that is different than what in Washington state law we refer to as squatters. In fact, there's a squatters bill that is a statewide bill that talks about squatting more in the terms of folks who enter the property who never had a right to be there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so example of that is like, let's say I go on vacation and I'm someplace very nice and warm and sunny, and someone kicks in my door and it starts living there, right? They never had any legal right to be there. They're trespassing. And there is a way legally to deal with that situation that is very different than someone who was entered the property legally. And so there's one way is the squatter's bill to remove that person from possession. And then if you've had, if you were a tenant, for example, then that process is the unlawful detainer process.
Yeah. With the squatting thing then, and tell me if this is totally off base, because, you know, you hear all these stories and videos about, oh, you can go in and, like you said, kick someone's door and who's on vacation and just squat there. Do you actually have rights if you do that?
No.
Okay.
No, the state of Washington, we have a bill. It's called the Squatters Bill that enables the sheriff to remove that person. Now, whether the sheriff is willing to do that is another question.
Okay. Yeah. So then you run into these different shades, and you've got, you know, Sang Kim, the man who hasn't paid rent for 2 years in Bellevue. I've called him a squatter because that's just, I'm sorry, after that long, that's what I'm going to call you. But that's somebody who legally started there on a legal basis. And then you've got an even more complicated case with Steve Hickey, where there seems to be a pre-existing legal dispute that predated the current owner of the home. And that's just a whole mess. But when it comes to those cases, you know, when you had someone who started legally being able to be there, obviously they do have more rights than just a quote unquote squatter. So when we had Reagan Dunn, King County Councilman Reagan Dunn on the show last week, he was telling us that, you know, right now, if you're a landlord and you're trying to evict someone in that situation, it could take you until 2025 to even get a hearing. So from your perspective, what is something that could be done to shorten that time?
A lot of things. There's a growing chorus of voices asking for an audit of the Housing Justice Project, along with trying to achieve more dollars in the state budget and thus the King County budget for more commissioners to start hearing these cases on an expedited manner. I think what a lot of folks don't understand is that the unlawful detainer process, also referred to as the eviction process, is supposed to be an expedited proceeding. It's supposed to go quicker than a traditional lawsuit, right? Because we all know traditional lawsuits take a very long time. And the system is so bogged down and backed up and prolonged that now the unlawful detainer calendar takes longer to get a hearing on than a standard civil lawsuit, which is a massive problem. I think all sides need to come together and figure out a system that repairs these problems, these relationships, much earlier and much quicker, because the lengthening of the process doesn't work for anybody. It doesn't work for the system or any of the parties involved.
Yeah, and it, just as you pointed out, lengthening it intentionally. We heard that from Jason Roth, where it was, you know, the Housing Justice Project attorneys will go in there and they'll delay as long as they can, it seems, to keep someone in the home, which, as you point out, it just hurts them in the long run anyway. And they're doing that with taxpayer funds, which seems very odd. So, all right, Sean, we appreciate it as always.
Hey, thanks so much. And thanks for having me on today.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I always have a hard time with this word, colloquially. We can refer to someone as a squatter. The question is, you know, do they have certain rights and you know, how are they recognized under the law and all those things? We appreciate Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington giving us some insight on that. If you are a landlord, if you're a housing provider in the state of Washington and you are not a member of RHA, I'm telling you, do it before something bad happens to you and you get a nightmare tenant. It's like $260 a year, and they can help you avoid these crazy situations, but also help give you advice to get you out of it if you find yourself in one. We know Jason Roth was the reason that his case had stalled for so long, and then he was able to finally get the squatter out of his house was because he became a member of RHA. So do that now, rhawa.org. All right, let's get some pride stuff. We have our first crazy story of Pride Month. Only took 4 days. Before that, I've been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. You know, as a family, if you're struggling financially and you're looking at your budget and you think, man, Brandy, we've cut all the unnecessary things from our budget, have you taken the First Mark Challenge to see if they can save you some money on your insurance? Ben, our friend Ben Bailey and his wife Leslie took the First Mark Challenge. First Mark went out, shopped its carriers for Ben and Leslie, came back, saved them $1,500 a year. Here's Ben.
You know, more than anything, it was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today. And if those were adequate for, you know, say, if we had a major incident here at the house, you know, were our cars covered adequately, or were they actually, in our case, over covered, right? We have one car that's fairly new and another one that's, you know, a few years old. And the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah, I mean, $1,500 a year, think about what you could do with that money. So that's for the same thing that they were getting, basically. They are still well insured through First Mark. So take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies, and you never pay First Mark a dime for their services. All right, the city of Lynnwood is having a pride event that will feature a catwalk where children as young as 2 years old can strut their stuff in front of adults to vulgar music. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. Welcome to Pride Month, where insanity overfloweth. Instead of just innocent, you know, adults celebrating love is love and all of those things, now we got to throw kids in the mix. Not enough just to have your kid at the Pride Parade with you waving a rainbow flag. No, you got to strap high heels onto a two-year-old and make them walk down a catwalk to a vulgar song about hoes and sex. Super strange stuff, but I'm not exaggerating. So this is the Lynnwood Pride event, Welcome to Oz. Pride event with speakers, live music, fashion catwalk contest happening this Saturday, June 8th. Sorry, my schedule's full. Won't be attending this at the Lynnwood Events Center. So here is some information on the event from our friends over at the Center Square. An event put out by Lynnwood Pride in partnership with the City of Lynnwood and co-sponsored by Snohomish County will include a kids' catwalk, allowing children as young as 2 years old to participate, potentially to songs containing sexually charged lyrics. Among the catwalk judges, shock of the century, Lynnwood City Council members Josh Binda and Nick Coelho. Also judging is Marilyn Chase, a former state senator, and Senator Mark Elias, a Democrat from Edmonds. In addition to Binda and Elias, event speakers include Snohomish County Sheriff Susanna Johnson. Snohomish County is co-sponsoring the event through its Office of Social Justice, which, quote, seeks to dismantle the individual, institutional, and structural racism that exists in the county. The office offers sponsorship initiatives of up to $5,000 to organizations working to advance efforts related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Interesting. So a couple things there I would note about the judges of this child catwalk. And let me say for the record, you know those parents, I hope I'm not offending anyone, those parents who doll up their children with makeup and fake teeth and fake hair extensions, and they send them out to beauty pageants. Yeah, that's weird too. That's weird too. But, you know, and like little bikinis and stuff, that's weird too. But this is just some blatant sexualization of children. I'll get to that more in a moment. But I would just note of Josh Binda. I don't know if, Nicole, you have the picture. Josh Binda, remember, he was under fire for posting a shirtless picture on his Instagram to talk about speeches he gives to school children. That's a little creepy. I sense a common theme here. And then, of course, State Senator Marco Elias was one of the main backers of Senate Bill 5599, which makes it okay for kids to run away from home if their parents won't let them get gender therapy, and the state will hide them at a shelter and refuse to tell their parents where they are. Interesting. So now he's judging a child catwalk. It says from Center Square, as part of the 3-minute catwalk, Linwood Pride suggests several songs, including Let It Go from the Disney film Frozen. That's appropriate. Great. Oh, let it go. Let mm-hmm. it go. That's fine. Nothing yeah, sexual cute. There. Yeah. Other songs suggested for the catwalk include Texas Hold'em by Beyonce, Supermodel You Better Work by RuPaul, and Free Your Mind by En Vogue. Let's read some of the lyrics, shall we? Starting with Texas Hold'em by Beyonce. And I'll be damned if I cannot dance with you. Come pour some liquor on me, honey, too. It's a real life boogie and a real life hoedown. Don't be a bitch. Come take it to the floor. Can you imagine the 2-year-old walking down in their little high heels or whatever it is? Don't be a bitch. Come take it to the floor now. It's a real life hoedown.
I mean, it's a good song. I'll give them that.
It is. It is. From En Vogue's Free Your Mind. I wear tight clothing, high heeled shoes. It doesn't mean that I'm a prostitute. No, no. I like rap music, wear hip-hop clothes. That doesn't mean I'm out selling dope. No, no, no. Oh my, forgive me for having straight hair. No, it doesn't mean there's another blood in my air. Yeah, yeah, I might date another race or color. It doesn't mean I don't like my strong black brothers. What is wrong with these people? Literally, either mentally unstable or... could it be something more nefarious, like the goal of this LGBTQ activist?
I won't change your little town. Your own children will. Your children will see us. Your children will love us. And your children will join us.
Your children will love us. Your children will see us. Your children will join us. And heck, why wait till they're in high school to indoctrinate them? You start at 2 years old, put them on a catwalk to Beyonce's Texas Hold'em. Love it. Great stuff. Love that taxpayer money's going to that, too. Support it. Unbelievable. All right, really quick with a national story. Dr. Anthony Fauci was under questioning in Congress. We played a little clip of it yesterday. I want to play a clip today before we get to our daily subscriber show poll, which is on this subject. I want to play a clip today about the COVID lab leak theory and whether he was directly involved with suppressing it as some sort of conspiracy theory.
Today you testified that you did not suppress the lab leak theory, yet in the past you have said, quote, it is a distortion of reality, unquote. You've said, quote, I've heard these conspiracy theories, and like all conspiracy theories, they're just conspiracy theories. That's what you told the American people. And so would you like to clarify what science were you following then versus
now?
Yeah,
no, I've also been very, very clear and said multiple times that I don't think the concept of there being a lab leak is inherently a conspiracy theory. What is conspiracy is the kind of distortions of that particular subject. Like, it was a lab leak and I was parachuted into the CIA like Jason Bourne and told the CIA that they should really not be talking about a lab leak.
Thank you.
Yeah, but he also could have come out when he knew that the lab leak theory was entirely plausible and been more forceful about that. It goes back to one of the things I said yesterday about there was no humility and no mea culpas and no acknowledgement that, hey, we got this wrong, you know, on vaccines. They didn't do what we thought they were going to do. So as Anthony Fauci at the time on that, he could have reached out
to states like Washington, where Governor Inslee was firing people over not having the vaccine and said, we don't advise this because of what we know. And so it's this inability to change course that has completely, I think for a lot of people, they've lost faith in the ability of even health officials to operate in a manner that isn't political, that isn't ideological, and that is based on science, and that changes as science or our knowledge of a situation changed. And lab leak theory was one of those things that really snapped me out of this automatic assumption that everything's a conspiracy. There were a couple things that happened, I think, in that 3-year time frame where I would have, old Brandy would have been like, stop spreading conspiracies. You know, this didn't come from a lab in Wuhan, China. And then it was like, oh, it probably did come from a lab in Wuhan, China. Maybe I shouldn't be so quick to dismiss things as conspiracy theories. I asked you guys on social media, or not on social media, well, technically, in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, whether knowing what we know today about COVID-19 and the government's handling of the pandemic, would you have done anything differently during the pandemic? In hindsight, if you had all the information that we have today about what happened and didn't happen, I'll go first. I would not have gotten the COVID vaccine. I wasn't mandated to get it. I got it because I believed that it would be the path out of the pandemic. I got it, honestly, because we were going to Cabo and I wanted to be able to go to Cabo and come back without any sort of issues. In hindsight, I would not have gotten the COVID vaccine. I would not have covered certain things in the way I covered them when I was on Fox 13. I think I would have been more forceful against the governor a little bit sooner. So there are many, many things. I would not have gone to restaurants that required me to wear a mask to walk 3 feet in after the mandates went down. So there are definitely things that I absolutely would have done differently as a journalist. What about you guys? A lot of you are saying there is stuff you would have done differently. Kathleen says, I would have tried harder to get a fake vax card. That's funny. Pam says, we got the shots. Don't know how much it helped as I got COVID twice and my husband got it once. And since we had vaccines when we were kids plus prevention shots as adults, we didn't object to getting COVID vaccines. We were retired, didn't have to contend with work or school decisions. We went everywhere and did everything we wanted to do. Didn't see any reason to not get out as long as we were being smart, but it was foolish to close businesses and schools. Julie says, I wouldn't have fallen for all the chaos and bull if they tried to shove down our throats and in our bodies. And yes, I refuse the shots. Glenn says, should have flipped off the salesman that yelled at me from 50 feet away to put my mask up while I was standing by myself talking on my phone. Clayton says, I would have never gotten a shot or wore a mask. Healthy diet, exercise, and I would have gone on with my life. I agree on the masking things because remember early on, it was like, oh, don't, you know, leave the masks for doctors and nurses. Do you remember this, Nicole? Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, because we'll have a shortage and you don't need them anyway. You're not in these like close contact, high risk situations. And then it was like, wear a mask or we'll kill you.
Right.
You
know, or else.
Wear a mask or we'll excommunicate you from society. You're fired. I need to stop pruning. Mm-hmm. Is anybody pointing out I'm pruning today? I keep pruning.
I've noticed it, but no one's mentioned it.
People tell me on the chat, stop touching your hair, Brandy. Wouldn't you touch it if you had such luscious long locks? Anyway, I'm trying not to prune as much. Paul said no mask, no shots. A lot of people saying basically they would have pushed back a little bit harder if they knew what they knew. I don't blame anyone for in the early days of the pandemic freaking the heck out. I mean, what's not to freak out about? Their life as we knew it was completely changing. I freaked out. I just wish I'd been red-pilled much sooner because then I got on TV and helped, you know, push this narrative of fear and stuff, and I really regret that. In fact, I gave a speech about that. I'll have to post that speech again at some point. If you want a link to that speech, send me a message, and I'll, because it's up on, it's been up on podcast mm-hmm. for a while. Anyway, interesting stuff. Keep sending those answers in. Okay, before we get to, wow, questions and comments, closing sanity check. Oh, I was going to say, we're almost to the end of the show, but it's...
We're to the end, but...
1:20. Sorry, yeah, we're way over. Should I just make it a 2-hour show at this point?
No.
Oh,
too much pressure.
Too much pressure. I like going over as opposed to falling short. All right, inflation has driven up a lot of things, but also it's tough for businesses that operate on the margins where they're selling a ton of stuff, but at just narrow profits. And so they have no choice. There's nothing for them to absorb. And so the same is true for fast food restaurants. There's a lot of franchisees who are like, what do I do? Do
Do I charge $9 for a Big Mac? Who's going to pay $9 for a Big Mac? So this is a big concern out there about, and I think indicative of inflation and the fact that you can see what's happening is you see things that are supposed to be cheap just going sky high price-wise. We asked Zach Abraham, our friend with Bulwark Capital, about, you know, the nexus with inflation and how a lot of these businesses are just really left struggling as a result.
In order for these guys to maintain profit margins, they've got to push the incremental price of the products they're selling to a level that is beyond the reach of the average consumer. And, you know, free market capitalism isn't a perfect system, but the reason we've stuck with it is because it's better than everything else we've tried. And it seems like we have to relearn that lesson every 10 or 20 years or so in this country.
Yeah, I don't know if we're learning the lesson yet. Some people still believe that inflation isn't bad. Go buy a Big Mac. Go buy a Big Mac and let me know if you think inflation's bad. Anyway, Zach Abraham, he's great at this stuff. He has a radio show at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, if you just want to get more in tune with what's happening in the economy and get some absolute no-nonsense advice. But Bulwark Capital, they specialize in risk management for retirement portfolios. So if you are retiring sooner or later, make sure that not only your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risk, but that it's protected to deal with inflation. I mean, God forbid you're retiring this year and you're like, well, what I saved isn't going to get me as far as I thought it was going to get me. So Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital, that's what they specialize in. Make sure you reach out to them. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, we'll get to our comments, but first, I did this whole long list of thank yous yesterday, and I forgot one of the most obvious ones. You gotta go back to my shot, Nicole.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Andy Silly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's Andy Seely or Silly. I prefer calling you Andy Silly. At our event this weekend, he came and he had me got a gift for me, and he said, I noticed the flag hanging behind you is actually an outdoor flag, so I got you an indoor flag with all the fancy tassels. Yeah. So it's up behind me. Thank you, Andy. I still am working to smooth it. You know, it was in a box, so I was like, I got to steam it. But
and thanks for giving us the lesson that there's outdoor versus indoor. I didn't really know there was a proper flag for indoor.
Here I am. I like that one. It's makes got sense. All the tassels on it. It's mm-hmm, great. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Andy. Erica Dornang with a $4.99 super chat. I had a 5% chance of surviving COVID. I think they owe people like me to tell us where it came from. Oh, wow. Because, like, I'm assuming underlying health issue or something like that. Nicole, mm-hmm. I didn't ask you. Would you have changed anything from the pandemic?
You know, I lived my best life during the pandemic for the most part. Like, I did pretty good. I probably would just drink less.
Oh, I wouldn't have gained 40 pounds. Right. Oh, I should have said that. Yeah, I
drank a lot.
I wouldn't have ate until I was ballooned up and none of you guys said anything about it. But that got us one of our first big show sponsors.
Yeah.
So it did. Really, I go. Gained
no
weight.
Regrets there.
I gained weight knowing that I could reach out to a weight loss mm-hmm. sponsor, get them to come on the show. So, you know, I took one for the team, basically.
You did.
Yeah. Okay, lawsuits and initiatives. Jeff Monhagan. I don't know how to say that name. I don't think they'll ever understand the hypocrisy. I'm not sure if they're just not capable or if they do notice and purposefully just turn a blind eye. Yeah, they're like, democracy's in peril, but let's just take a big crap on democracy mm-hmm. in the process. John Beck, I'm an independent, and this election, I'm not voting for any Democrat. I've heard this before, and it scares the hell out of me. Plus, I'm tired of all the lies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this goes back to what I said. Supermajorities are terrifying. Think about that. That's one political party that can push its agenda with no obstacles in its path.
I mean, and by political party, you're saying, you know, 20 people.
Right.
These 20 people, doesn't matter. I mean, they can say they're a political party, but really they could be as extreme as they want to be mm-hmm. behind the curtain.
Right.
So it's a few people that will get to make these decisions.
Yeah. I mean, it's more than 20, but you might have a couple that are on the fence.
You know what
but
I mean?
Yes, I do. Steve Hickey. I was like, Steve. On the Steve Hickey story, Lieutenant Dan says, this is fishy on all sides. Something tells me some of these victims may not be saying the whole story. At the same time, the court needs to get on this and settle things. They're too slow. Slow Nomo says Hickey is a very good used car salesman. USPSA says he's living there without paying. What money is he owed? Get out, dude. Greg Olakis, if he wants to honor the court process, then why doesn't he pay off his debts to his subcontractors? This dude is full of S-H-I-T. Alvin says, sounds like Steve would fit into the Biden White House staff. Trisha Quigley, he took on project after project. He took the payment, but he did not pay the vendor he promised to pay when the subset bond went through. I have emailed that he said he paid the vendors, but he did not. We had a couple like alleged victims of him get in the comments. Jessica Scotty says he walked away with over $90,000 of our bank loan money unaccounted for. He could not justify or show where that money went. He never responded to our legal letter to him to show where our money went. Leland Taylor, I wound down my construction business after 2008 and spent the next 2 years paying off everyone I owed money to because that's what an honest person does. I sold everything I had. Wow. Good for you, Leland. Yeah, and I think, look, again, is this a clear-cut case of squatting? No. But it's really complex, and at the very least, I'm just putting myself in this situation. If I was in this legal dispute over a home that I knew I wasn't going to buy anymore, I'd been paying, you know, a lease on it, so basically rent every single month. And there's a woman who's bought it, I would at least be paying her rent.
He stopped paying before she bought it.
Right. Wait, he stopped paying long before she bought it. But then when this third party comes in, I think I would have some. I asked him if he felt bad for her in part of the interview. He said no.
Yeah.
Because she bought the house knowing that sort of this legal thing was going on. And I get that. And you can question that decision. But I think, again, there's just right and wrong. And if I was in this situation where my dispute was with the previous homeowner, and now I've got this woman, buys the house with a divorce settlement, has four kids, I would tell her, look, I am staying in this home until this is legally resolved, but I will pay you rent because I have money. You know, he's not poor and destitute. So I'm going to pay rent. I'll pay taxes, the taxes, because right now she's not getting any rent and she's paying the taxes on the home. So again, I think there's right and wrong. And there's sort of a preponderance of, like Leland said, you know, at a time when you're trying to buy this $1.5 million house and paying a significant amount of money to the previous owner to that end, but you're also screwing over like the guy who pours concrete, you could have said, I'm going to live in a more reasonable place. I'm not going to buy this house right now because I've got all these other things going on and I'm going to work hard to try to pay those contractors back and make things right.
Yeah, I just think that. I think it's as easy as, like you said, it's right and wrong. And it has now turned into squatting because you could have moved out of the house and continued with your lawsuit against the guy that you believe should have sold it to you when you could have sold it for more money and whatever the deal was. But that's a lawsuit. But go on, move on with your life and either, you know, let the courts work it out. But now you've moved into wrong territory. So now you're a squatter. I'm sorry. I know I disagree with on that because I think he is a squatter because you don't pay. And so you're a squatter and you're living there. So I think that it should have been sue him. If you think that legally it was yours and you could have sold it earlier than he was allowing you to sell it or whatever it was, then sue him. Take it to court. But this is wrong.
Don't continue to stay there without paying anything.
Because
that
is wrong.
Yeah. Wrong or right. And where is sort of your moral compass and things, especially when you're a public figure. And I'll just say, there's a lot of things I would like to do that I'd like to flip some people off every day when I'm driving to work.
That's why you haven't put a common sense bumper sticker back on.
But I don't do it for two reasons, because I got a Dave Reichert for Governor bumper sticker, so I need to conduct myself appropriately. And on the off chance, somebody would be like, Brandi Cruz, flip me off on the way to work. And I would have been like, well, stop camping in the left lane, loser.
Right. Yeah.
What were we talking about now? Oh, yeah. I think if you're a public figure, right, you just do the right thing and you try to do the right thing and just live your life that way. But you're right to the point where, sorry, I have something in my throat, where you don't, he's taking on more risk by staying there. Mm-hmm. Because let's say a judge doesn't agree with him. And then a judge says, you have to pay all this back. Yep. For all the time you spent living there for free, as opposed to if he just left and said, look, this isn't going anywhere. I'm going to take you to court and I'm going to sue you to get the money back that I paid toward the purchase of the home. And then this lady can move in. It's not like he loses his case if he leaves the house. The case proceeds.
Right.
But he's just not living there. And then this wouldn't be happening with the protests and stuff like that.
Leverage is not legal. I mean,
well, it's not necessary in this case.
It's not necessary, and it's just not. Yeah, it's not moral.
Well, it seems like the leverage he does, and he acknowledged, like, yeah, there is a little
leverage component there because maybe they're more willing to give to settle with him.
Right.
Right.
But wait, you're going to take a settlement because you don't think you can make it all the way?
Like, just to get him out.
That's what gets me very off about it because I think if you're willing to settle, then you don't think you have a case that can go all the way.
And I have never had like a construction business, right? And I get it that there's that it's more complicated than a podcast, surely. But, you know, I've been doing this job for a long time.
Because we're good at it. It doesn't appear that it was
If there were bad things to come out about me, they would have come out. And I just, it's, average people don't have that many skeletons in their closet. That was my argument against Semi Bird too. Average people don't have that many, average political candidates don't have that many skeletons in their closet.
And I get the pushback. Sometimes I think that people think it's okay to scam the system because we all feel like we're scammed a little bit by the government, by whatever it is. And so we all feel like we have a little right to game the system a little bit, but at some point it's over.
Yeah. And somebody says, I'll just say, Mary Christie says, Brandy, you can't justify Hickey no matter how hard you try. I don't think I'm trying to justify what he's doing. I'm just making a distinction between there's an ongoing legal battle and disagreement over, you know, what happened with that house. So it's not as if he's just sitting there and being like, I feel wronged, so I'm not going to get out. They're fighting it in court. So I'm just making a distinction with the term squatter. But I make no mistake. I think what he's doing and staying there is wrong. Absolutely. 100%. I think he should leave today. So I disagree fundamentally with what he's doing. And also from all the conversations that I've had, I don't believe that it's just a, you know, matter of course when you wind down a construction company to leave all these subcontractors, blue collar, hardworking people out hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't think that's moral. I don't think it's right, especially when it seems like you have money to try to make them whole again. So just to be clear, Mary, I want to be clear. All right, should we get to our, this one's great. We're going to have endless sanity check content with Pride Month and all that stuff coming out. Let's get to our closing sanity check because we are running late. Lady MAGA USA is apparently an influencer. It's like a, what is the PC word for them? Drag queen?
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
drag queen, MAGA supporter, whatever it is. So, Lady MAGA USA goes out to talk to a pro-Palestine individual and brings up something that has been clear all along that, you know, Palestine doesn't have the sort of human rights that a place like Israel has.
And so I did a study abroad in the Middle East with Israel and Palestine.
Would you say you're pro-Palestine or pro-Israel?
Pro-Palestine.
As a gay man, I would be punished and or put in prison or killed if I were openly gay in Palestine. How do you react to that?
I didn't know that. So
it is illegal to be gay in Palestine. You are punished by prison or death.
Is Israel?
No, Israel has gay pride. Okay. Israel is completely open to lesbian and gay people. So Palestine puts them in prison or kills them. You weren't aware of that?
I was not aware of that, no. So that does pose an interesting aspect.
Have you seen the Queers for Palestine movement? It's a very common movement, but I don't see any Muslims for Queer movements.
Yes. That's where it gets gray, right? Like, that's where I feel
Well, for me, it's not gray. I am fearful of Islam because there is no Islamic country on earth that embraces me as a gay man.
So, okay, so maybe I'm confused, because Israel, which is still an Islam country, right?
No, Jewish.
Okay.
So Israel's Jewish, Palestinians are Islamic.
Okay.
Facts are challenging things to really accept. Clearly for that young woman. All right, that has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you've not signed up to support the show already, we sure would appreciate it. That is how we continue on this mission of ours. All the fun, all the horror, all the stress involved in it. You can sign up for $5 a month at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.